to order. Do I have a proposal to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second? Is there a second? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, it's approved. Now there is one change in the minutes, which we just discovered, and that's that when it lists the people present, it lists Vice President Borja, but she's not on this committee. So either she was substituting or it's a mistake. So Andrea, you think it's just a mistake?
I think that you may be right, that she may have been substituting. I will go back and check, but.
Why don't we ask, Letty, were you at the meeting on July 14th? Yes.
She was, so it is a mistake, a correction. Okay, so thank you.
We'll correct that. Do I hear any other corrections to the minutes? If not, we'll go ahead and without objections, we'll approve the minutes as corrected. And now, since it's a public meeting, we'll have public comment. Do I see any public comment? I don't see any public other than the people that are here on the meeting speaking. But if anybody wants to say anything, they can say so and we'll let them do it. Otherwise, we will move on to the agenda item of new business. And I will, I don't know who to turn this over. Who do I turn this over to?
So I can speak of this item. So the first one is an update on the request for proposals to address the healthcare needs of Black communities in Coachella Valley. And that RFP was responded by a couple of organizations. One is Borrego Community Health Foundation, and the other one is Desert AIDS Project. We have invited both organizations to meet with the staff and to clarify the intention behind the proposals, their vision, the implementation of what they foresee will be the way to address the healthcare needs of that community. And we have also invited members of the community to participate in those meetings. We want this to be an opportunity for residents of the Desert Highland Gateway to provide their input and to comment on this process as well, since this is a proposal to address their needs. Any questions on that?
Can you repeat who's responded so far, please, Conrado?
Desert AIDS Project and Borrego Community Health Foundation.
And at least in for the first part of this sort of two-part addressing the needs of the African American community, do you foresee that any other organizations besides federally qualified health clinics would really be able to respond, or are we, in other words, do we have the two agencies that could really do something responding?
I believe the deadline to submit a proposal is passed. So the two organizations that submitted proposals in time were those two. We have some major concerns with Borrego Community Health Foundation, and those concerns are legal concerns. The reason for that, and just for full disclosure in this conversation, Jenna, who is on the call, is a member of their board of directors, but we have serious concerns with their FBI investigation and any potential risks that this may create in the response and the implementation of any plan to address the healthcare need of Desert Highland Gateway.
I understand that, but my question was, could you foresee any non-FQHC being able to submit a proposal that would meet the needs that we're trying to submit?
I believe that a non-FQHC would have the ability to submit a proposal. I think the challenge with a non-FQHC would be addressing sustainability of the effort, But yes, a hospital, a clinic, anybody could apply and come up with a plan on how to address the healthcare need of that community.
Okay. So,
yeah,
so
then Les, the deadline's passed, Les, so proposals should be closed.
Well, first of all, some committee of the board or the board itself could extend the deadline. I mean, if necessary, that could be done. I was trying to understand how a non-FQHC could really make a contribution, since I'm not an expert in this area, but it seems to me that most of the residents of Desert Highland are Medi-Cal eligible. And therefore, if you're going to provide medical services to them, if we're talking about medical services, then probably Medi-Cal is a big part of it. Now, obviously, there are other health needs of the community that are not the provision of medical care, but I think we talked about food security and things like and grocery stores and things like that. So, but I was just trying to understand whether we could expect a non-FQHC to submit something that could be potentially of use.
I think it could be possible that a non-FQHC would submit a proposal, but I doubt that it would happen, because to be able to sustain a healthcare provider with the low Medi-Cal reimbursement rate, only a federally qualified health center can survive with those low reimbursement rates.
All right. Well, we'll leave it to other committees and our legal people to pursue the other issue that you brought up. Any other questions or comments about this issue? Letty, did you have anything to add or questions?
No,
Arthur?
I'm good. Thank you.
Arthur?
I'm good. I was going to talk about Borrego, but Conrado clarified that.
Yeah, and I don't know that we want to get into a discussion about Borrego here in this committee.
Right. It
really isn't relevant to this committee. So let's move on to the next order of business. Conrado, I'll let you introduce that too.
So item number B, which is the health profession workforce. Donna has more details on that.
Right. I heard from Sheila Thornton from One Future, who are they're finishing up the process for their scope of work to be able to submit what they're looking at in order to offer scholarships and to be mentoring, as well as giving them all kinds of along with support services. So we should hopefully be having that very soon, and I will again
And what is that organization? I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
One Future Coachella Valley.
Okay, got it.
They're the ones that have been doing the Pathways to Success scholarships for the last 15 years.
Okay. Any questions about that? Letty, Arthur, okay. Moving on to our ARC data information. Who's doing that?
I think that's us, right, Hark?
Easy, please.
Yes.
Unless Desert Healthcare District staff would like an introduction.
Sorry.
We have a staff report on the board packet. And in this staff report, we have a brief summary of where we are in the process. I want to highlight one more time how challenging it has been to engage the community in these times of COVID, when everything has to be virtual. And I don't think that we have had the rich participation we had anticipated. Nonetheless, there are no surprises in what we have found so far. And I think Hart will be able to highlight some of those finding. That's why we invited Hart to present today, and so we can have a conversation about the process, where we are, the timeline, and what we anticipate will be the next steps, and also to receive guidance from from this committee on what would be reasonable next steps for the staff. So with that, Jenna.
I'm going to pass that to Casey, as she is the one that is intimately involved with this, doing these focus groups with dozens of local residents. So Casey, please take it away.
Yeah. Thank you for giving us the space to speak with you. We're really excited to talk about the hard work we've been doing. Today, I wanted to briefly touch on where we are in the process, and then I wanted to go over some of the progress we've made on the focus group specifically, and then I wanted to share some of the preliminary results of the data collection with you. So currently, we're in the midst of hosting the community focus groups. And 2 weeks from now, we'll be meeting with the advisory council to take part in the same prioritization process with them. We'll then weave together these pieces of data to come up with a final priority list of health needs in the region. Later down the road, we'll do another round of community engagement to bounce those ideas off of our community and see what they think about our top needs and help us come up with ideas with how to address these issues. All of that data will then feed into our CHIP report, which is really the end goal here. We'll come up with the community dashboard and finalize that CHNA and CHIP report. So to touch on the focus groups, just to give you a little bit of background on how we engaged those individuals for the focus group. So we reached out to each of our advisory council partners and other nonprofit partners in the region and asked them if they'd partner with us on hosting community focus groups. And you've seen the list of groups that have participated. Together, we selected a date and time that they thought would be fitting for the group they serve, the audience they work with. And then once we chose a date and time, we provided those partners with a flyer and email verbiage so they could then distribute to their constituents and get people to sign up. People who were interested in participating would sign up for the focus group through Eventbrite, which was managed on our end, so we could kind of monitor throughout whether focus groups were highly filled or if they needed more people. And when they weren't filled by individuals, we would reach out to those organizations and ask them to do another round of recruitment, a push, and try and get a few more people involved. Your packet, like I mentioned, it includes a list of the focus groups. We've had 22 so far with 108 participants. Since the time your packet was released, we now have 113 participants. You'll see that some focus groups are more highly populated than others. So we reached out to some of our partners to try and understand, why is it that some focus groups are full? Why is it that some are not being attended by any at all? So we had 6 of our nonprofit partners give us feedback on what the landscape of community engagement is like at this time and why there's no participation at times. And really what our partners have said is that they've seen the exact same thing with their engagement, is that some events are really highly populated and some there are absolutely no participants. So it may have to do with the people's interest in the topic itself. It could have to do with some people just being zoomed out and they just don't want to participate in the events altogether. Some have mentioned there are connectivity issues in the East Valley, which I think we were kind of expecting to happen. I think many of us are aware of, but so they mentioned a lot of people have hotspots now, but if there's 3 or 4 people in a home, one hotspot doesn't really lend extra time for someone to participate in something fun like a focus group. So we're trying to think of new ways how to get everyone involved. Some strategies we've thought about are, you know, increasing the interest level of the focus groups by making it more appealing somehow. Smaller focused audiences. So if there's already an existing group on LGBT in the East Valley, they're more likely to participate because it's a tighter knit group. We've also talked about implementing a survey as an alternative. It might be easier to distribute and get more feedback. Or in-person methods have also been discussed as a way to get people more actively engaged. So the last thing I wanted to touch on was data analysis. We did a little bit of preliminary analysis of the focus group transcripts to really pull out some of those main themes in the data. 2 of the main questions we looked at are really the heart of our discussion, what we're interested in knowing most, and that is, what are the most common issues in our community and what are the most important issues in our community? And for common issue, the main big themes were access to healthcare, economic stability, education, and environment. And some of those subtopics, we looked more closely at the really like granular level data. What are these really minute topics that people are mentioning? And they are bringing up health education is needed more widely. There's more support for students is needed. There's a lack of transportation in the region. There's a lack of providers. And then senior issues was something that was a surprising category that kind of arose that a lot of seniors mentioned. You know, we need care in a number of different ways and senior issues are being unaddressed. And then just that last question was, what is the most important or critical health issue in our community? And some of those subtopics that were brought up were a need for more physicians. The Salton Sea brings environmental problems with it. One kind of surprising thing was the need for better quality healthcare. We didn't really discuss that in depth in the report, but a lot of people were mentioning they just weren't getting the quality of care. They were being glossed over by doctors and didn't feel that their health was being cared for as much as they'd like. And then lastly, senior issues was also brought up in this category that there are a number of senior issues that are really important that aren't being addressed. So that's really the preliminary results we've had from our community members on those. We're gonna dig more deeply into the data, and this isn't by no means final, but we'll use the same process to look through the advisory council data and take that all together and find those main priority issues. Are there any questions on anything we've talked about so far?
I have a couple of things. My first question is, what is the impact of the pandemic on the work that you're doing right now? Has that come up? Has it changed pretty much where you started? And then with it becoming a bigger issue, exacerbated certain areas or changed the direction you were going in?
Well, it certainly completely changed what we had planned, right? We had initially planned in our response to the RFP, things like door-to-door outreach, and that certainly is not happening now.
I'm not referring to how you conducted it, but what you're hearing from the participants, how has COVID impacted what they're dealing with? I was kind of surprised that mental health wasn't higher up, but I thought maybe it's because it wasn't brought up early on. I don't know. I'm just wondering, has there been anything that you see with the kind of responses you've gotten from the service providers or the community members who have participated in the focus groups? What has been the impact of COVID? I know it's been there, but what has it changed during the process from where you started to where you're at now?
I think, and Casey can expand on this, but really what we've found is that COVID has just exacerbated the issues that were already issues. So poverty was already an issue. Housing instability was an issue. It's more of an issue now during COVID.
And let me also mention that during these focus groups, we said, here are one set of questions we're going to be asking you. There's a whole other set of data that we asked them. What are the main issues you've had during COVID-19? So I have a big juicy pile of data about that specifically, what issues people have had during COVID. And you're absolutely right. Mental health is across the board in every single group. That will be number one by and large. And I'm excited to share that data with you later because I think that will be useful, not only for the healthcare district, but for a lot of nonprofits serving our community.
Well, but mental health is actually the number one thing, number two behind access to healthcare. But in other words, it was bad before, it's worse now, kind of thing.
Question.
Letty, are you finished? Because I want to.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
I have a technical question. When someone responded in any one of the categories and said, I think this is an issue, was there any refinement of their answer, or was it just really recorded as stated? Let me be specific to really narrow the question. Quality medical care as seen by lay people, with all due respect to what lay people can and cannot see, to make a statement about the quality of healthcare always concerns me to understand what their thinking is.
For every single one of these points, we've asked the participants to elaborate on their ideas so that we understand it more fully. So what you're seeing here is really just bullet points, but for each one of these things, I can pull out the exact specific comment on how they talked about.
Can you give me 30 seconds worth of summary about what they perceive of as quality or lack thereof?
I can get you that data by the end of today.
Okay, it was just a point of curiosity. My second question is really aimed at the my colleagues here in terms of affordable housing and the constellation of these answers. I wonder where it really fits. It's not high. It's not number one. It doesn't jump out at you as the overriding issue. And I just wondered how much consideration we need to give that when we reflect on the larger issue of affordable housing, as we will at some point.
That's a good point, Arthur, but we're not done yet. We haven't finished collecting data. So but that's an important point, though. We'll have to see where that lands. Arthur, do you have other points you wanted to ask?
Oh, that's fine. That's all I could think of.
I have a couple. Let me just mention. I think that I wondered if you specifically asked about guns and domestic violence. Well, I think you should, and I think by not asking, you are missing a very important area. So that's one recommendation I have.
We purposely left it open to just say, tell us what you think the health needs in the region are. We didn't say, do you think X, Y, Z is an issue? But there were a few people who mentioned crime and safety and gun violence and methamphetamines as issues. And those are in the more granular level data. And I can get those counts for you. I can tell you exactly how frequently those were mentioned.
Okay. I'm taking kind of a global view here in that, one, we want to find out what are the issues people are concerned about, and of course, mesh them with what we know are important issues. But then eventually the board is going to have to pick things that it can make a difference about. And when I think about gun safety and domestic violence, those are things that the board, the Desert Healthcare District, could be actively involved in and helping organizations deal with those two issues. Yet I didn't see them here, and that's why I brought up the point. The other thing is when, and again, you said that you asked about specifically about COVID. Of course, we're doing sort of long-term strategic planning here, not short-term strategic planning, but when you were asking people about COVID, did they mention whether access to testing was an issue? And also, did they mention that when they are identified as having been infected, is finding a safe place to isolate? Have those been issues? Has that been an issue?
Access to testing was brought up once or twice, maybe, but not the second part of what you said. I think by and large, it was access to mental health care, ways to get exercise. A lot of people are hungry and don't have money. It was more just kind of the struggle of being in quarantine, I think, and less often those other issues.
Okay. So that brings me to my last point. And actually, Conrado mentioned it at the beginning. I don't know that there are any surprises here. In some ways, it's reinforcing, and maybe we'll find something that we never thought of, but it's kind of reinforcing what we thought were the issues. And I'm going to go back on my soapbox in that it's now November, and I'm not sure waiting 5 or 6 months for more information is going to really help us clarify what our strategic, help us move on to the next step, which is the board looking at this information and setting our strategic priorities. So I'm concerned that it's taking a long time. I understand, I'm not blaming anybody. I think it's amazing that you've gotten this much, but the question is there diminishing returns by trying to keep finding out the same things we've kind of known all along.
So if I could respond to that, I do want to point out that if you scroll down to the Gantt chart timeline, I believe it's the last page in the very last page in the packet, not a ton of the rest of this time is given over to data collection. So, you know, it's making sure that this community health improvement plan doesn't just come from the expertise of Hark and Desert Healthcare District, but it also comes from the expertise of our steering committee, our community members, et cetera. And that, I think, is something that it is my understanding was a very high priority of the district, that this be something that can, you know, that represents more than just one organization. And so I do want to say that it's not, we're going to do 5 more months of data collection. There's a lot of different pieces that go into having a very thoughtful next steps plan, evaluation plan for how you will be looking at this going forward. So I just want to make that point.
That's a good point. And so I guess my question then is do you want to have those people begin looking at the data sooner rather than later?
Well, let me rephrase your question in terms of looking at it a different way. Could we assume that there will be no changes and begin a dialogue as if there were no changes, recognizing if there's a need to make changes midstream, you know, fine-tuning adjustments, we can. That represents an argument that says we're not going to be surprised by anything. We're just going to get more detail, but leaves a little flexibility so that if indeed something pops out of the priority that we just assume it to be based on what we currently know, we can always fine tune our thinking and therefore accelerate the agenda without disturbing this agenda and deal with interim data, if you will, as interim data and final recommendations as final recommendations.
I think that's definitely a Desert Healthcare District determination. You know, I think we are committed to doing these steps because that's what was laid out in the RFP and that was what was very important to Desert Healthcare District. And I do have to say that I think they're great steps.
I'm not suggesting not to continue exactly
as planned. Neither am I. But what I'm saying is this is the work that we have planned. If you want to do things with interim data, go for it. It's definitely better than no data or just going off of instinct. But I think that's something that's for you all to determine. I wouldn't make a recommendation for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. Maybe I wasn't clear. I was really focusing my commentary to my committee colleagues, not to the staff.
And again, just to reinforce what Arthur's saying, I want the board to have a couple months through its committees and the board as a whole to really do the next steps after this is all complete, and still have the budget, have it ready in time to do the budget, which really gets done in May. And I think if we wait until March and to do that, I think it's almost too late. I'd really like to see some preliminary information before the committees and before even more important than before the committees, before the community groups and advisory groups. I'd like to see some information to them so they can begin to discuss it right after the first of the year.
That was the point of my recommendation to you, Russ. That's exactly my point. To accelerate, you know, on an interim basis or move forward on an interim basis with the full recognition that as the report matures and finalizes, we might have to fine tune a recommendation or reprioritize something, but at least move the agenda.
And if you get more data in that points something to a different way, we can make the adjustment. Like you said, Letty.
Okay, I have a couple of points now. My first point that I want to address is the to Les's issue about concern about running out of time before we have to make decisions for budgeting. I think that it's more important that we let this process play out because there has been so much commitment to this process that we have to write it out to March. We've heard from our expert, Jenna, telling us that this is things that she sees that there's great value to this. And if we need to make some decisions for the budget that are more general and then make changes later on, I think that that is more flexible and rather than trying to take shortcuts at this point to rush this process. That's my first point. My other point that I wanna come back to the access to healthcare, that is by far the biggest issue. And between now and when we have our next discussion, I would like Hark to answer, maybe not at this point, but just anticipating the questions that I would have later on is, how is this affecting, the affordability? You said before that you're going to kind of be digging deeper into that to find out whether it's underinsured or non-insured, and whether this is because of the COVID issue. Is it because of our immigrant population? So those are things that I'm going to be wanting to know deeper. And speaking of immigrants, there is a group of funders that work with the Regional Access Project Foundation, as Jenna is aware of, that we need to get their input to talk about their affordability issues. And with that also being access to healthcare, whether the need for better quality care, if that has to do with the fact that it could be, is it because there's not a culturally competency, or is it because of hours of operation, or is it because of transportation? Those are the digging deeper issues that I'm curious about. So that's it for me. Thank you.
Conrado, would you like to add anything?
No. Nothing at this time.
I think we wore him out.
Donna, Chris?
I'm good.
Getting back to what Letty was mentioning about the quality of healthcare, you know, those three things, transportation, cultural competency, and hours of operation. I know when EvalCorps did the specific one just for behavioral health, those were things that were lifted up, those three things. so I don't know, compare or embed or whatever needs assessments with other needs assessments, but it always comes back to, it seems like whoever does a needs assessment, even back when Raul Ruiz was doing his back in 2011, those three things came up as well. So it seems to be an issue
that never changed. Do you want to add anything?
What was that for me? Sorry.
Would you like to add anything?
Yeah, I have a couple of things. Maybe just comments or questions. I really am nervous about how we are going to value community voice over data in this process. I know it has been extremely difficult to get focus group participants, and it's hard to drill down on issues that we already are very aware of. But the whole point of this from the beginning is having a completely community-driven process. So I'm a little bit worried about that. We are 8 months into COVID, so I don't think we can use it as not like an excuse anymore, but learning how to adapt even further, learning from others. Everyone has to adapt. It's very difficult, but I feel like maybe we need to learn more. I mean, 19 out of our 24 focus groups had 4 people or less when we were capped at 10. That is a lot of focus groups to be hosting. Anyways, that's a lot of time for your heart. That's a lot of time to reach out to this advisory council. And the fact that we can't get our numbers up and really don't have very many ideas as to why is frustrating for everyone. And I mean, we're 6 weeks into this, and just last week we reached out to the advisory counselors trying to learn why these numbers were low, when I think we should have been doing that from the beginning. And that's not on anyone's fault, because this is a really hard time, but I think I'm really worried about the community voice in this whole project.
Lack of or too much thereof? I wasn't sure what you were focused
on. Oh, lack of, for sure.
Lack of.
All that's already taken place up until now. So if there are going to be gaps or not having enough of input, we would slow it down even more. Maybe those things could be concurrently as we're continuing on with the process.
Yeah, I don't think it has to stop.
I do want to point out, if I may, that Casey recently was looking at what some other, large reputable organizations do for their CHNAs, and by no means is 113 participants embarrassing. It's better than many of them. So while absolutely, yes, we wanted to have a lot more than this, we wanted to have door-to-door, we wanted to do a paper survey, et cetera, and we haven't chosen to go down that road, I think this is not anything... This is not a bad community engagement or far too little. This is something that has been a lot of qualitative research. And in qualitative research, and it's not so much about the total sample size, it's about the saturation of ideas that come to the table. And I do feel that we are reaching that. So I don't know that having that many more focus groups or that many more participants in the focus groups would have increased the quality of the data.
Jenna, are you referring to those examples that you sent us, Donna and myself and Conrado, about other needs assessments?
Yes.
So I looked up some of those counties and they had populations like 20% of ours. We have 500,000 people and they had 47,000, 20,000, and they were getting similar numbers. So it's comparing like apples to oranges. So I'm not saying that we don't have valuable input. I'm just concerned about merging them appropriately.
I totally understand that, but I think part of this is a confusion over the term, representative, and wanting to have representative data. Since this is qualitative, it's never going to be representative. And if we wanted something to be representative, we would need to go with a survey, et cetera, as we had initially discussed, which we can totally still do. But just to make a point that in qualitative research, it's inappropriate to focus on sample size.
It's sort of like the presidential polls. How many people do you need to sample before you get results that are truly reflective? I kind of agree that unless we were to sample, 10% of the population, I don't know that we'd get any more accurate information. But the same also occurs with qualitative data. If you talk to three people in one organization, you get their view. And again, I don't know, when you go out to these organizations, are you talking to their clients? Or are you talking to their staff?
Their clients.
Okay. Yeah. So one question I have is, do we talk to their staff and find out a little bit of what their view of their needs, remembering though that, if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So you have to be aware of that. I remember some of the community needs assessments that some of the hospitals do, nonprofit hospitals, to maintain their tax exempt status, they basically talk to all the organizations in town. They very rarely actually talk to people, patients. And so we do need to be careful that we're not just representing their needs. But can we get information from the organizations that isn't skewed to what they would like to see us fund?
That will be the next phases, the advisory council and steering committee engagement. Those will be staff rather than community members. And yes, the reason why nonprofit hospitals talk to community agencies is that that's all that the IRS requires.
Okay. So again, I want to go back to what a couple of us were saying before, and that's that don't stop trying to collect the data, but can we begin to speak to these organizations sooner rather than later to get so that if we need more time to get more information from them and to process it, can that occur? Well, I mean, when on your timeline here do you start talking to the different organizations out there?
The meetings have been scheduled for the third week of November. I think they might run into the fourth week of November, but they're already scheduled and the invitations have been sent.
So, okay, I'm looking at the timeline. I guess I don't really see that there, but it's not a separate item.
The Advisory Council, AC. So it'll be Advisory Council members along with other nonprofit partners that are interested in participating.
Oh, I see. Okay, I've got the last 2 weeks in December.
So prioritize health needs with AC. It's under step 5. You can see that it's November week 3.
Oh, I got it. Okay, got it. That's with the Advisory Council. Got it. Okay.
The one that you're pointing at that's a little bit further down, that's to focus on the CHIP because we want their input on that as well.
Okay. All right. Again, as we move along this process, though, we need to be aware of the deadline so that we have information. And if information comes in later, we can adjust things. But I think the board really wants us to do good strategic planning. I think we want to do it. And just keep that in mind if there are any things that can be moved up sooner. That's my advice. Letty, do you have anything else you want to add?
Nope, I think we've covered it. Thank you.
Arthur?
No, I'm good, thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, is there anything else on the agenda? I don't think there is. That's old business. Any final comments before I adjourn? Thank you, Jenna and Casey. And continue the hard work. And I think it should be publicly noted that, and Jenna knows this, that I turned down my $25 gift card. I sent a note to Jenna saying, do you want me to fill out the survey and get my $25 gift card? And she said, no, thanks. For some reason, I always get these surveys. Maybe it's because I'm retired. I don't know.
No, it's because you have lots of valuable knowledge, Les. Come on.
I just want to say thank you to Megan because she has a lot of expertise and I know she gets into it a lot more than us. So thank you for looking out for the district, on how to make this work and for asking those tough questions and for doing that extra research to get more information from HART. So thank you, Megan.
You're welcome.
All right. Everybody have a nice rest of your day. I'm sure some have more Zoom meetings left.
Let me say something. I believe that given the tight timeline we have, we should meet again next month and keep this conversation very present between the board and the staff. And I also want to reiterate what Letty just said about Megan. If it wasn't because of all the hard work that you do, I believe we wouldn't be where we are. Thank you very much.
Yes. All right, everybody. Have a good rest of your day and on to your next Zoom meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.